The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Good morning and welcome to Friday morning, April 11th, 2025. 57 degrees. It's going to be a nice day, nice weekend. Looks like it's going to be nicely warming up over the next few days. Not very wet, though. Just keep that in mind. So as far, I might have to actually turn on some sprinklers after a while. Even after all this massive rain that we've been having, huh? At some point, I got to water the weeds, okay? Got to water the weeds. Anyway, join the conversation here, 770-563-3770-KMED. Kind of a tit-for-tat thing going on right now. I guess we're looking at retaliatory. It's really between Trump and China right now. Anywhere from 100 to 145% tariffs coming in from China on American goods, although they haven't been buying a whole ton of American goods in the first place, from what I could tell. And needless to say, the markets are in a not a hissy fit. It's you know, some things are going down, some things are going up. Gold this morning, though, is quite an interesting story. Gold has soared now. Let's see, the other day it dipped to below 3,000, like 2,974 at one point. And today we're looking at gold at $3,236 an ounce. That's at last look for the futures. And Mr. Silver has joined the fear trade too. Silver this morning at 3160, roughly speaking. So, needless to say, this there's a lot of people piling into some of the fear commodities at this moment too. Some of the stock market people are saying, we're looking at lower futures. Others are saying we could. It's going to be an interesting day once again. Yesterday, the markets leaked off a little bit, but we'll just kind of dive in and out of it. Markets are going to do what markets are going to do, and millions of people deciding where they're going to place their money or put it. I'm kind of on the sideline a little bit at this point. And I know some people might say that's kind of stupid, but I felt like raising a little more cash at this point. But that's just my point of view. And, you know, if you're talking with real estate people, it's always a great time to be buying a house. If you're talking with stock people, it's always the best time to buy stocks. You know, it's sometimes, maybe I'm missing out on some things this morning. But I'm just going to kind of watch. I think there's some room for buying in at a better price later. And maybe I'll be proven wrong on that, or maybe I'll be proven right. But one way or the other, who knows? It does feel like we're kind of at the end, or the bull market, the just straight across bull market is probably a bit exhausted at the moment. But we'll see. We'll just kind of watch. I'm taking more of a Buffett view at the moment. Okay, I'll just kind of, you know, watch everybody slash and burn, and of course, some people will make a lot of money during the slash and burn, too. Well, we got a little more. I finally went up to KOBI and I took a look at what they were reporting on when it came to the Eugene Emeralds, because we were talking about that a bit yesterday. We have been over the last few weeks. Because sports team socialism, I'm not a real fan of it. This is something which has made many cities and many taxpayers just throw millions upon millions of dollars in building sports stadiums in order to attract private businesses. And it has been one of the most irritating trends. And of course, it's being done, and I can understand there are some people that would love to have a football team, or they want to have, there's sort of like an area, a sense of pride, you know, these sort of things. But there's a big price that comes with this. Essentially, sports team socialism means that the sports team owner gets to keep the money, and the community gets to pay for everything they need so that the sports team can make the money. Very rarely do you have a sports team want to come to an area and say, hey, I'll tell you what, if maybe you got a little piece of land and maybe you lease it to us cheap or something like that, we'll build the stadium, we'll run it, and we'll pay the expenses. In fact, I don't know if anyone's ever done that. They always expect the community, you know, the communism. They expect the communism to get together and tax the folks and pay for their private business. It's amazing. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Elon Musk. Of course, Elon Musk, I'm a, you know, big strapping. And of course, he made an interesting car, right? Nothing wrong with electric cars. But the whole thing about this was that, oh man, we need to get tax breaks in order to get this so we can fix climate change, right? And so everyone is looking for a grift these days out of the taxpayers. And I'm hoping that the Medford City Council, after their Wednesday night session, their study session is what it was, there was the presentation, and they had all the folks show up there. Eugene Emeralds is a high A affiliate, San Francisco Giants, and they want this new home because the taxpayers in Eugene saw through the grift attempt and they said no to the $100 million. Well, they took the $100 million stadium plan and they took it down to $90 million, and they proposed that to the Medford City Council the other day. And there were a few questions that were asked. I think Jessica Ayers and Nick Card, by the way, I reached out to Nick Card and left him a message. Hey, Nick, you want to talk about this? I don't know. Something tells me that maybe the city council doesn't want to talk with me about it. Maybe I'll talk with Jessica Ayers about it. Who knows? But Jessica Ayers asking if this is even feasible. And there was the guy who was the team's economic gun, and he's up there saying, well, you're not going to make money on the stadium. Downtown Medford, like a downtown in a lot of places, needs to be revitalized. Our stadium would be the capstone. This is the anchor. This is what you build everything around. You build everything else around. And this is why it will work. And I couldn't help but just laugh as I'm reading and listening to the story on KOBI. Because they're talking about, hey, we're going to have this ball stadium in the downtown, make it like a capstone or near the downtown. And this is at the same time that the city of Medford is talking about this whole climate-friendly, equitable community bullshit that has been forced in by the past Governor Brown. Remember everything, climate-friendly, equitable community. Translation, the 15-minute prison cities, or the freedom cities if you're in the Trump administration, you know, however you call it. You don't have to go anywhere because everything will be right here. And by the way, you won't be allowed to have a car. But you won't need one, but you won't be happy. You won't need to go anywhere because all of your needs will be provided by the communism in your climate-friendly, equitable community, and we will save the planet. Yeah, I know I'm targeted with a broad brush. But essentially, that's what this nonsense all is, that the city of Medford is going in. And then the Eugene Emeralds are coming in. Well, let's drop a ball stadium in the middle of this, too. Okay, well, I guess if you're not allowed to leave your 15-minute prison city, climate-friendly, equitable community, unless you can go see a ball game. Maybe that's the hook to get everybody into downtown Medford. But anyway, yeah, they're proposing this one, and we'll see. So they want a $90 million stadium, and even their own money people are saying it would take 23 years before the money coming in would be higher than the expenses. So they're talking about the city of Medford would be, which means you and me, would be paying expenses, would be subsidizing expenses. There wouldn't be enough money coming in for the baseball or from the baseball action to pay for things. The expenses would be higher than the revenue for 23 years. Now, I don't know how they figure out that after 23 years, the economy magically, well, at that point, then they'll probably be talking about tearing down the stadium and building another one because it won't be adequate either. See, this has all been coming because Major League Baseball, just like National Football League, two of these major corporate grifters, all of the owners are very, very wealthy people. But they essentially have communities fighting amongst themselves to have sports ball. You know, coming to their town. And I don't mind people wanting to get into sports ball. That's fine. But they never want to do it on their own dime. They want to do it on everybody else's dime who may never go to the game. And they'll say, well, you know, what was it? Randy Adams, one of my Facebook friends out of Klamath Falls, he's another broadcaster. And he goes out there and says the typical thing. Well, you know, that stadium could be used for a lot of things. Yeah, why don't we use it for a jail? It could be a part-time jail than a baseball stadium. In the summertime. That's what somebody said on that. I kind of laugh at that. You know, yeah, we'll make it multi-purpose. $90 million multi-purpose, a baseball stadium, and also open-air jail. Yeah, we could do that. Maybe Nate Sickler could get behind that. And all of a sudden, Chamber of Commerce says, you know, a jail and a baseball stadium, that would be a great thing for the community. I know, I'm just kidding around, kind of having some fun with it, but... the nonsense that passes for economic growth and vitality. But that's the way of the land. Everybody wants somebody else to pay for their entertainment. And that's essentially what you're doing. If baseball, and I said the same thing like I say about aquatic centers, if these paid so well, if aquatic centers would pay so well and make so much money, then why did the Medford taxpayers have to build the aquatic center, right? Well, the reason private sector hasn't done it is that they always lose money. In fact, the best person to have an aquatic center is to buy it after it's gone bankrupt once or twice, which I think happened down in Reading. You know, the Reading Aquatic Center that people would go down there, or the water, you know, the water park, that sort of thing. You buy it after it's gone through a couple of bankruptcies, and then you're in good shape. You know, those sort of things. And same with sports stadiums too, but they always hold this out. And I don't blame the cities for at least exploring these things. I really don't. I'm trying to be fair about this because they're trying to put lipstick on a pig. You know, it's a deindustrialized Oregon. It's the climate-friendly, equitable thing. You're not supposed to be doing business. You're not supposed to be doing business. You're supposed to be sustainable and, you know, putting on the hair shirt in every way possible and not using energy and not driving a car and not eating meat. And, you know, you're supposed to be eating rice cakes and being miserable in your climate-friendly, equitable community. But you'll be happy even though you don't own anything and can't do anything. So that's where I think we find ourselves right now. They're looking for a way to get additional revenue in a city that, once again, makes very few things. Because America, as Trump has even said, makes very few things. He's been trying to work on that. And the markets will be wild on that today. We can talk about that. We can talk about other things in your mind, too. But, yeah. There we go. $90 million for a ball stadium. And at least the grift is out in the open. What can we say? Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning. This is David in Phoenix.
Hello, David. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Okay, here's what my confusion is, and you can help me.
Okay.
I thought we had the Harry and David's baseball stadium, and I thought we had the Rogues. So where am I missing with this Emerald thing?
Well, we do have the Rogues, and we still do have Harry and David, but you have to understand is that for the high-level athletes that are in Major League Baseball, they require much finer facilities from the taxpaying public in order for them to play baseball, to play a child's game. Much higher facilities, including weight rooms and massage tables and various other things. Things that, now I'm serious. These sort of things. There are standards that Major League Baseball, I once saw a story about, you know, how high the standards are that Major League Baseball demands of communities in order to get ball teams.
I don't even get that.
I know. But you see, this is just it. So many people are just hoodwinked by this whole thing. Like, oh gosh, we'd have a high level A team playing out of Medford, and I get that. You know, there's a tribalism, a source of pride. I think when you have a good team, a local team doing well. I mean, look what happens. Look what happens to us right now, David. Sports teams lose and men's testosterone goes down, right? You know, seriously, that stuff happens. So it's a real thing.
I have my pink Quick that I can drink. I'm fine.
Yeah, okay. but it's also, though, you have cities that, once again, in a land that has decided you're not supposed to make anything because making things makes carbon, you know, that sort of thing.
I love carbon.
I know you love carbon. I love carbon too. Plants love carbon, but remember, everything's about we're not supposed to do it. So they have to come up. They try to come up with all sorts of other nonsense to make up for the fact that we used to actually make things and cut trees and produced wood and made stuff.
But what is the difference between the Emeralds and the Rogues? What's the difference?
Well, the Rogues, of course, it's kind of like, you know, college players. I forget exactly the structure of it. It's not a major league deal. It's not a this would be a major league. This would be like an A team.
So how major are they?
Okay. Well, if you talk to the people in Eugene, they don't think it's that major because they turned down the $100 million grift bond.
Well, I want to turn it down too.
Okay. But the thing is, though, the Medford City Council might do the same kind of sleight of hand that they did last time, which is all we have to do is just have a majority vote on the council, and we'll put it on your utility and your parks fee. That's how they do it in Medford. Okay,
put a jail on my utility and parks fee, and let's clean up the real mess here in our valley.
Maybe so. Just to be fair about that, though, jail would be a county facility. This is a City of Medford project that they're discussing right now.
All comes out of your wallet and my wallet.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Thank you for the call, David. Good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome. Hello.
From the Applegate.
Oh, hi, Vicki. What are you thinking this morning, huh?
Well, I got a couple points in my head. First of all, instead of a 15-minute city, why don't they make a homeless city? Okay. And second, the baseball season is seasonal. It's
yes.
not a year-round thing
no.
for the bigger athletes. I don't watch sports personally, and it's ridiculous.
A lot of people do, though. It's a big deal for people, and I understand that, and I appreciate it. We all have the things that we love, and a lot of people love sports. So there are people who would support it. Don't get me wrong. Okay.
And as far as the water park, I've been to the one down in Redding, and I think that it would be a major moneymaker up here in our valley, because if you look at it, I mean, the main businesses that they have here are car lots, restaurants, and motels.
Yep.
So why don't we do something where it's going to bring people in during the summer? I mean, look at the Family Fun Center. When they put that in, I mean, that gave a lot of families something to do together.
And you see, and that's a private enterprise, and I'm perfectly fine with them doing it that way. The problem is that park, that water park in Redding, went bankrupt a couple of times. And so it's a very risky thing because it's done with discretionary, stupid money.
We have so much tourism up here. How much tourism do they really have in Redding?
I don't know. It may be more than ours. I don't know. How much tourism do we have here in Southern Oregon? Well, maybe more than we realize. Look at all the hotels that have gone up. Appreciate the call there. I'll grab one more call. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this? Hello.
Good morning, Bill.
Hi, Tom. How you doing? What do you say?
Pretty good. Well, you know, the Medford City Council probably the most self-destructive city council, you know, anti-people and pro-bureaucracy and so forth. And everything they do is to discourage business and so forth. Very self-destructive.
Yeah, so it's self-destructive on that hand, but then we want to do this and hang this business on other people.
Which is destructive of people's lives. So everything they do is counterproductive. So here's my question. I wonder how much money we would have to pay each of the city councilors to have them go down and listen to a few talks by Diane Anderson.
You know, Diane Anderson actually goes to the city council and speaks now and then. Good for her.
Does she really?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you know, I'll tell you what, Tom, could you give me a call in about 10, 15 minutes? I do have a guest that's rolling in here in just a moment, but I'd like to explore that more, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Good.
Thanks a bunch. Yeah, joining me here in a minute, so I'm looking forward to this. This is another example, the sports grifters and things like that. Anson Frerichs is going to join me here in just a little bit, and he's a former president of Anheuser-Busch. So, and we're going to be talking about how Bud Light did in that country, that company. It's a pretty interesting book he has out.
Joel here at Brother Ford and Truck Center.
Hi, I'm Matt Stone, owner of Stone Heating and Air, and I'm on 106.3 KMED.
How did it happen? How did the Bud Light situation happen over at Anheuser-Busch? Well, I'm so proud to bring on Anson Frerichs, who's a former president at Anheuser-Busch, formerly the home of America's most popular brewery. And he just kind of watched it as it all went down hard. He has a new book about it called Last Call for Bud Light, The Fall and Future of America's Favorite Beer. How you doing this morning, Anson? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to being here. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, by the way, this was always your dream. Wasn't it always your dream, you know, before you ended up going to Harvard and everything else to end up doing this kind of work, you know, running Anheuser? Was it a dream to actually run Anheuser-Busch specifically, or did you just kind of fall into that? How did that work? Huh?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's a dream for like a lot of for a lot of males to run sort of a beer company. And I don't know, I was one of these kids that grew up in the 80s and 90s and, you know, had seen Spuds McKenzie and had seen the Budweiser Frogs and the Real Men of Genius and all these amazing advertising commercials. So I actually never thought I would end up running Anheuser-Busch, but when the opportunity came to join them after business school, it was a really cool company with a 150-year history of the Busch family running it. It had recently been bought by this group called InBev that kind of recruited me to come work for them, and so couldn't turn down the opportunity. And I don't know, after a bunch of moves and different businesses, ended up president Anheuser-Busch. So it was kind of a dream job, and really sad to see what happened over the last couple of years. And I had left about a year before the partnership with Dylan Mulvaney, but saw a lot of the problems that were coming down the line that led to that partnership. And unfortunately, you know, led to a deal where the company lost millions of consumers, billions of dollars of value, thousands of people got fired. So it's been really sad to see, because it once was a really, you know, truly great American company. And I wish they would take steps to become great once again, but still haven't turned the ship around. Yeah. Over the last couple of years.
And that essentially, they took $30 billion and set it on fire in the parking lot, right? It's essentially what they did with the Bud Light fiasco, right?
I mean, that's it. I mean, the whole Dylan Mulvaney fiasco, the stock was, I think, trading around $70 a share. I mean, it's been down below $50 a share. It really has yet to recover over the last 2 years. And it really hasn't recovered because Bud Light, which used to be the number one beer brand in this country, has lost 50% of its sales. And none of these sales have come back. It continues to decline. It's been passed over by other beer brands at this point. And that's been problematic for its other beer brands like Budweiser and its craft portfolio. So there's been just a lot of missteps that have happened over the last couple of years. It's been, you know, frankly, sad to see.
Something which I found very common in businesses, you'll talk with folks, and it seems like they never seem to want the customers that they have. It's always about the customers they don't have. And is that part of what ended up, taking things down for the company? How did that all start? Because, like I said, you used to run it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's 15 years of history that led to this marketing disaster. I think one was people forget that Anheuser-Busch is actually no longer an American-owned company. In 2008, it was bought by this Belgian-based company called InBev.
Yeah.
And InBev owned brands like Stella Artois and Hoegaarden and Leffe. And there was really this clash of cultures. I mean, the Busch family was for 150 years. The Busch family had run Anheuser-Busch. I mean, this company was started in the 1860s, 1870s. This is when you had, you know, the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts and the Carnegies running other empires. They had all gone by the wayside, but still in the early 2000s, I mean, you had the Busch family. August Busch IV was still running the business. They had some issues and unfortunately had to sell. And the culture was very different. I mean, the Busch family understood the U.S. consumer. They were headquartered in St. Louis. They were the geographical center of this country, and they got the U.S. consumer. InBev, based in Belgium, was more about cost cutting. They brought in a lot of brand managers from Belgium and from other parts of the world that I don't think ever really understood the U.S. consumer. And then in 2015, there was a big problem that happened where the actual InBev executives, they moved the headquarters, the sales marketing headquarters of Anheuser-Busch from St. Louis to New York City. And I think that was a really big move and a really big problem, as all of a sudden you started recruiting people that had only grown up in New York City and had only seen the U.S. through the lens of Fifth Avenue, and that's just a very different customer base than the traditional Bud Light, Budweiser customer base. So, you know, the company, they didn't even know who their customer was, I think, by the year 2023 when they did this partnership. And then they just didn't really think about which brand should serve which customers. I mean, you know, Anheuser-Busch, they have hundreds of brands.
Yeah, but the thing is, Bud Light, you know, people just wanted to drink beer, have fun. They wanted to drink beer and have fun, right? Isn't that essentially what they wanted to do, Anson? That's all it was.
I mean, that's it. And it should be, Bud Light should be for drinking beer, having fun. They have tons of other beers that can serve, you know, the different customer bases, and they didn't leverage their whole portfolio. That was a problem.
Yeah. Now, what role did ESG play in this one? And I'm wondering, did you have a problem with it, with BlackRock coming to you and Larry Fink saying, hey, Anson, you know, you guys better get a lot of DEI and go for the Island of Misfit Humans in your ads, or else we're going to dump your stock. Was it ever that open or overt? Could you tell me about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was massively problematic. This whole movement away from, call it, shareholder value, shareholder capitalism, business focused on their customer. And there was this big movement led by really BlackRock in the United States, which is the world's largest asset manager, consulting firms like McKinsey, a lot of activists, where they were really pushing companies to adopt ESG and DEI, mostly doing it because they were putting companies in ESG and DEI funds and charging 3x the amount of fees on these funds versus the regular funds, and consulting organizations were therefore extracting massive fees to coach companies on how to become more ESG friendly, more DEI friendly. I mean, I saw it at Anheuser-Busch where our board all of a sudden was asking us to put in diversity dashboards and effectively quota systems. And I mean, really focusing like really, really heavily on DEI. And that's really like how Bud Light all of a sudden started doing more partnerships with people that, you know, frankly, like had nothing to do with the Bud Light brand. There was a whole organization called Human Rights Campaign. And every year they needed, they essentially to get 100% score on your DEI index, your Human Rights Campaign index, you have to do so many partnerships with, you know, the LGBTQ plus community, even if it didn't make sense for your brand.
Yeah.
You know, like Bud Light would never touch really like controversial issues or partner with controversial political people, essentially did this campaign to appease BlackRock and to appease the Human Rights Campaign and appease all these stakeholders. And it was obviously to the detriment of the brand. And we saw that not only at Bud Light, we saw it, you know, with Disney got involved in the whole parental rights issue in Florida, and Coca-Cola was getting involved in election integrity law. All of this was to appease kind of the BlackRock and ESG and DEI agenda, which has now imploded.
Anson, I only have about a minute left with you, and I just wanted to make sure and get this in and ask you, is this going to go away, or is so much of this just baked in the United States DNA right now in corporate structure that we've got a lot of work to do? I'll give you the final word on this.
Yeah, I think there's definitely still work to do, but we're in a much better place than we were 2 years ago. I mean, Bud Light became the straw that broke the camel back, where every CEO all of a sudden woke up and they did not want to be. I mean, there's this new adjective essentially being Bud Lighted, and nobody wants to be, you know, the next company that gets Bud Lighted, where you lose, you know, millions of your consumers. And that's the least sustainable thing that a company can do. I mean, the whole ESG DEI movement was based on sustainability, but when you're losing your customers, you lose revenue. That's the least sustainable thing. So even before Trump took office, you saw a lot of companies like Walmart, Tractor Supply Company, and Harley Davidson backtracking on ESG and DEI. You've seen even more so in the last 2 or 3 months. I think that's good for business long term, of let business get back to business, focus on their customers, focus on hiring, leave all the politics aside, leave that to the politicians. I think that's going to be good for American business, American shareholders, and also good for the democracy that we live in moving forward. Let individual people vote on all these political topics, not having companies and CEOs tell you what to think and do.
Anson Frericks, great read, by the way. I'm really enjoying looking at the inside of how this all developed. And it's Last Call for Bud Light, the fall and future of America's favorite beer. We'll put this information up on KMED.com. Anson, great getting a chance to talk with you. Thanks a bunch. Thank you. It is 641 at KMED and 99.3 KBXG. We'll do a quick check on news. More of your calls coming up. Find your phone Friday.
Oregon Trunk and Auto.
Trust and Will is an online estate planning service. For details, see trustandwill.com.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED. And you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
And I hope you are waking up. 770-563-3770-KMED. And we got Tom standing by. We've got to finish that conversation we had before we were interrupted by the guy who used to run Bud Light and Anheuser-Busch. Interesting story there. Deplorable Patrick, you wanted to weigh in on that briefly, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, Bill, that was an excellent segment. I've been waiting to hear something, but I will tell you, I took my van through the car wash the other day, and I could have sworn I saw a Lissler Heinerscheid down there, dyed her hair. Different.
I'm sorry, that you saw what, Dad? Saw who?
Alyssa Heinerscheid.
Who is that?
The master of stupidity at Bud Light.
Oh, that was the marketing person, right? The marketing person that was fired. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, now he had left the presidency like a year before that all ended up going down. So I guess I can't necessarily blame him, but he did make it clear, though, that you could already see where the DEI and the ESG and the Larry Finks and all the investment, the woke investing. And remember when they were talking about stakeholder capitalism rather than worrying about the people who actually give them money, that kind of thing, right?
They love to come up with new terms to try to distinguish themselves. And I think that Alyssa Heinerscheid was another one just trying to figure out a way to insert herself and make a difference. And she did make a difference.
Yeah. You know, I was reading his book, you know, this guy's book that is Last Call for Bud Light. And what he was mentioning in this is that even now, even though Anheuser-Busch has tried to reverse course, they're still down 50% on Bud Light sales, roughly speaking. And that people have just not forgiven them. And you got to be really careful about this kind of stuff. It would be like if all of a sudden under diversity, equity, and inclusion, Patrick, I were to say, you know, I'm going to take on KMED and we're going to put on Rachel Maddow show. So we put on Rachel Maddow. What do you think the reaction would be? And I'm saying, but listen, we're trying to get diverse opinions and views, you know, on the station. What do you think would happen here, right?
I think if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick. 770-5633. Rachel Maddow, right after Bill Meyer. We'll replace Markley Van Camp and Robbins with Rachel Maddow. Just kidding. Let me talk with Tom. Tom, we got interrupted because I had to schedule talk there with Anson. And I think you wanted to go a little bit more into this ball game, this ball stadium push here out of the Medford City Council. And I'm not completely, I don't want to throw the council under the bus here, but they are trying to put, maybe this is what challenges Southern Oregon, Tom. Let me run this by you. Southern Oregon, we'll take Medford as an example, even though you live in Talent. Medford is too large to be cute and quaint, right? It's, you know, it's not going to have that Ashland or even like a Jacksonville sort of field. It's too large to be cute and quaint, and it's too small to have the gravitas to, you know, attract the big stuff. But they keep trying to do that. And I'm wondering, could that be some of what we're looking at here and this desire that, you know, the ball team will be, you know, lightning in a bottle for us? I don't know. What are you thinking?
Well, what I'm thinking is just what happened with Bud Light and Medford City Council. I see an analogy or connection between the two because they're both trying to be politically correct and the DEI business. And Medford City Council, like I said, is just making one bad decision after another. They continuously do that. And you look at downtown road striping and 20 miles per hour. So it's just over and over and over. And all these cameras all over the town to you know, as a revenue enhancement.
And then you're talking about the planners come. Well, we need to do more things to attract people downtown. Well, people would be attracted downtown if you ended up making it easy for them to use the streets and get there and don't take away your parking and do these other things.
It's common sense.
It's kind of like the way Bud Light didn't like its customers that it had. And so it did everything it could to tee them off and make them go away because they wanted a different type of customer. And I don't know what type of customer that the city of Medford is looking, according to the urban planners these days. I guess someone who's doesn't have a car and only wants to walk every place and you know, wants to live in a climate-friendly, equitable community. I don't know.
That's what I mean. It's this wrong-headed thinking. You know, they got Alan Journay to testify at the Medford City Council for a lot of their programs. So this DEI, I'll call it crap, is very dangerous because it's not based on common sense. It has this very skewed ideology that it's not for the best interests of people. And you have so I see just over and over this messed up thinking that causes bad decisions, that causes hardship.
And maybe what the city is working through, though, and I'm trying to be really fair about this, is why I invited Nick Card on. Hopefully Nick Card will return my call and we'll have a chance to talk about it. I like Nick. We've talked with him before about things before, you know, going on here. And I'm wondering if all of this is that the cities find themselves caught between climate-friendly, equitable community orders coming down from the governor's office, and also the reality of where all the urban planners have one point of view. I don't think there are any urban planners that really look at cities the way they used to. Everything about urban planning today is to turn us into Europe, and of course, Europe has its own set of problems. But that's where they're going.
I really think if they just went and listened to Diane Anderson's talks, we'd get a whole different perspective coming out of the city council.
So you're proposing that we should pay the city council to actually sit down with Diane Anderson and listen to her for a couple of hours at least, and truly listen, right? I'll pass the hat for that one, okay?
Okay. Okay.
Thanks, Tom. 770-5633. Like I said, you know, I don't like picking on city council decisions in the past and things. I don't like doing this. It's not people. Why can't you be positive, Bill? Well, you know, I'm just looking out for the taxpayer. And it seems like it's really, really hard in today's Oregon to look out for the taxpayer and then be accused of, why don't you want to say yes to everything? You know? All right, let me go to line four. Hi, good morning. This Friday morning, this is the Bill Meyer Show. Who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill. This is James, trucking down Northern California.
Glad to hear it.
Thanks. I'm not sure if you covered this. I don't always have a signal, but... is it the reason the Medford A's went away because the city, the county, or the public wouldn't buy them a new stadium?
I don't know if that's why the Medford A's went away or not. I'd have to look that up. I'll try to. I know some people sent me some history on that, and I just haven't had a chance to read a bunch of that. But I would imagine part of that was probably part of it. That's always the implied deal. Yep. You know, if you want our amazing team, you better build us a stadium stat, you know, that kind of thing.
Because my dad was working there at the time, and that, I mean, that's the way I remember it. And, it, you know, people stopped going. I mean, there wasn't as many people going. The interest kind of got lost, and then they wanted a new stadium. They ended up moving them, up north of Washington somewhere. But
yeah. Yeah, I don't exactly know. Maybe somebody else can help me with that exact part about it, okay? Appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in. 770-5633. So instead of $100 million, we're talking $90 million for a stadium here, though, at least. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Hi, this is Dirk.
Dirk or Derek?
Dirk.
Dirk. Now, see, Dirk, that's a man's name. Good to have you on, Dirk. What's going on?
I'm just happy to be alive, and I'm excited because they've de-extincted a species of wolves, and that's just the coolest thing ever.
You know something I've been wondering about here, Dirk? If you're going to de-extinct something, why would you de-extinct a predator? Have you ever wondered about that?
Well, that makes it more exciting.
Oh, okay. You know.
No. And they want to do the dodo bird, they want to do the Tasmanian tiger, and they want to do the mammoth.
Uh-huh.
And I say, why stop there? Let's de-extinct Neanderthal or Bigfoot. And
well, I don't know. Sometimes if you look at some of the stores, you know, on a Sunday afternoon, I think Neanderthal never left us, but I could be wrong about that.
I think women listeners should call in and volunteer surrogacy for a Neanderthal.
So let's find the Neanderthal genes. And by the way, you have to say Neanderthal, otherwise you're a Neanderthal. You have to say Neanderthal. I guess that's the official way you're supposed to pronounce it now. That's what I'm told.
That's what I'm told, too.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so that's right. We need surrogate women, then, willing to give birth to Neanderthal babies.
That's right.
All right.
That would be cool, right?
Oh, yeah. Just because we can, we should, right?
Yes, you got it.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we bring back the Raptors, too, and the Tyrannosaurus Rex? So, you know, we don't need to have the Medford Airport any longer. We'll have Tyrannosaurus Rex, and it'll be just like the Flintstones. We'll put seats on the back of the Tyrannosaurus Rex, and we'll take off. What do you think about that?
You get it. That's it.
All right. See, that's how we'll get wealthy. And we'll be a climate-friendly, equitable community, flying not in jets powered by dino fuel, supposedly, but by being powered by dinos itself. 655.
Welcome to Dustin Curbs Parking Lot Maintenance, where exceptional parking lot maintenance service.
63 KMED.
I want to give an email of the day to someone who doesn't really like me much, but that's okay. In fact, they never give me their name, but their email is 399 Divorce and Paralegal. So it must be an interesting business here. Good for you. It says, Bill, we're in the business of doing our talking with our paralegals and legal assistants by way of written documents, briefs, so thank you for the invite to phone your show. But we're just a distant listener. However, we're amused by how so many times you lack facts to further your arguments, or it's the Bill Meyer way. Why have you not mentioned the stadium and business enterprise that exists in Kaiser, Oregon? Yes, it was a city providing a facility, and now look what it has become 20 years later, where it has paid for itself, generated millions of dollars in the market, added jobs, infrastructure, etc. Clearly, you have no clue about sports and the business of sports, whether public or private. Next, why do you not reach out to the Portland Pickles, owner of the WCL West Coast League in Portland? How about contacting Fred Herman, who once owned the Medford A's and went through all the facility issues with Jackson County and moved the team to Vancouver, B.C.? Had he contacted Boise Yakima, all these sources could give you more of a perspective on how public and private entities have put successful deals together. There are also a few major cities who have done quite well with joint ventures with pro sports teams. Further, there have been many cases where a privately owned pro sports team has leased a facility and helped make significant contributions to improving the facilities, such as Portland Timbers in the city of Portland, with Providence Park. Hillsboro recently entered into a new deal with the Hillsboro Hops to replace Ron Tonkin Stadium. Why do you suppose some cities are doing these kind of deals? Well, I'll tell you why, because they're desperate for some sort of revenue stream. Okay, that's what I would figure they're doing. And, you know, you're in a world right now that doesn't want to actually, you know, build something of use and import. And so the idea is that we'll, you know, just build our entire economy here in our climate-friendly, equitable Oregon on sustainable tourism. That seems to be it. Further on, this person says the city of Medford already has Harry and David Field and could easily add on and renovate that complex to meet MILB standards. The Medford Rogues are not a professional league team, with players being paid. The Rogues are a level above American League Baseball with most junior college amateur players. H&D could be built up and out, an outfield seating structure built, team lockers, rooms, hitting facilities, etc. And while we are on the subject, how much money has Jackson County invested in improving the Expo in 50 years? Zero. That facility could be renovated and undergo a facelift to be similar to facilities in Nampa, Tri-Cities, Kent, Washington. Medford could explode with a WHL Western Hockey League franchise like the Portland Winterhawks, Tri-Cities, Americans, etc. The Expo could facilitate NBA and WNBA preseason events. Arena football, indoor pro tennis, soccer. Medford and Jackson County is looking and is missing out on what many other cities in the region are doing, providing entertainment and related businesses. Providing entertainment and related businesses. I didn't realize, you know, I appreciate your alternative way of looking at this one, and maybe you're right, but should the people be taxed in order to do this? Because is the business of the city to actually go into business with these ventures? I know that's been a very popular thing to do in certain cities, and I understand. I appreciate your opinion, 399 divorce and paralegal. But did we move to Medford to, or did we move to Grants Pass, or did we move to Medford, you know, to do this? Is this a wealth generator for the general public or a wealth generator for specific businesses? That is my concern. My concern with the whole public-private partnership situation, when you look at the history of it, is that the public more often than not gets saddled with the cost, because even the Eugene Emeralds at this point, as I talked about, that revenue will be less than the expenses for some 23 years. And I would imagine when you're talking about that to the Medford City Council, you're trying to paint the best picture when you have the you know, the financial things. In other words, the revenue is not going to be, you're not cutting a profit for 20, 23 years or so. And that's a problem, don't you think? When even the Emeralds themselves admit that it's going to be, you know, more than two decades. How many of us know anything about what's going to be happening a couple of decades now here in Southern Oregon? I would just be proceeding very carefully, okay? Anyway, I appreciate your opinion. I'm going to give you an email of the day, even though you and I are going to disagree on this one, okay? Emails of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. And to me, I guess the public-private partnership $399 is... what is the principle? Where does this stop? Only the sports world seems to have this conceit that we're going to sit here and we're going to leverage city against city, you know, to come out who gets the best taxpayer grift in order to get our star players here to Southern Oregon. Okay? I'm suspicious of this. I'm suspicious. And I understand why the city council wants to do this. I do. Because once again, it's of desperation of an area that doesn't seem to produce much more other than chain restaurants and medical facilities. You know, it seems to be the the two big things that we're doing here. And it's to make up for the fact that we've deindustrialized down here in Southern Oregon too. It's my opinion, my observation for a number of years. We'll see. You know, we'll see about this. We'll see how wise the Medford City Council is. But, you know, $90 million is a lot of money. And my concern is that they'll just throw it on to the monthly parks and utility fee, just like they did last time for Rogue X. But that's okay. We can cornhole a tournament and WNBA ourselves into prosperity. Maybe you're right, and I'm wrong. I appreciate you writing, though.